This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 9419 8377.
You've been listening to the same. You could never understand.
Cities have the capability of providing something for everybody, only because and only when they are created by everybody. That's from Jane Jacobs, The Death and Life of American Cities.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been, and we know.
Sit back a little bit, lower that cadence, slow that breath down and bring that heart rate down. You're listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show, a show about bikes, riding them, fixing them, loving them, and today, talking about local traffic management, changing the hierarchy of local streets and creating accessible and inclusive neighbourhoods. Many thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! I've got four words to say to you, Amy. Turn the volume up. Many things. And joining me on the tricycle this morning, Faith and James. Good morning, Faith.
Good morning, Val.
And good morning, James. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Glad to have you on along for the ride, as we would say. Ah, what a busy week. Been a lot happening around Melbourne. Faith, you got a bike moment to share with us?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I spent the long weekend riding with a group of friends in Chilton at Mount Pilot National Park, which was very pleasant. But the best thing about it was one friend who came along. I haven't been able to ride a bike with for about 18 months, and that's because 18 months ago she was diagnosed with non-curable stage 3 lung cancer, which is increasing among people who've never smoked and increasing among women. 30% of women with lung cancer have never smoked. So that was really good fun to be able to get out on a bike with her again, even if she did turn off onto the walking track and not the riding track through a particularly hilly section. But, yeah, it's... Also, talking to her made me realise it is November is World Lung Cancer Awareness Month, and there's a lot of fundraising going on too, because the sort of research that has enabled the therapy she is having that allows her now, after 18 months with stage 3 lung cancer, to go on bike rides, is, you know, there needs to be a lot more of it with this rise in non in lung cancer among especially younger people. So I'll put a link in our bio to that, but if anyone wants to look up the Lung Foundation, they can also find links to donate.
Mm. There seems to be a rush of it.
It's suddenly you're hearing it everywhere, and the therapy is amazing, but it's not – it's probably better than chemotherapy and radiotherapy, but it's not nothing. Like it's reducing your working hours to a level where you're going to have to make some big changes to your life, and then you know, not having the energy to enjoy the other hours. It's, you know, it's still a really significant change to people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to bring that down. It was an up story. We went for a bike ride in a forest together for the first time in 18 months.
She enjoyed it and loved it. And the minute her legs start turning circles, she became a happier person.
She was back, just like, oh, yep. Yes.
Yep.
cough, hack.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, James, what about yourself? Have you got something to share?
I was gonna go down the typical whinge and pom route, which would be expected. And
you've been outbid.
I've been outdone. I was going to talk about my ride along Gertrude Street here and how kind of sketchy that was, being trapped between a tram line and some construction, and how uncomfortable I felt. But I'm going to go more positive.
Yep.
A couple of weeks ago, I did the longest bike ride with my 9-year-old son. I live in Chelsea, and we rode down the wetlands trails through Seaford. And it was just a nice side-by-side the whole time, having a little chat, connecting.
It's a beautiful trail.
Yeah, really good trail. Stopped, had a milkshake.
Great bird life.
Hopefully my youngest isn't listening, because he wasn't there. He didn't get a milkshake, and if he finds out, I'm in trouble. and then we came back, not along the trail. We came back along the long shared path, which is part of the level crossing removal project, all past Carrum and everything. So not as pretty, but very direct. Yeah. So we just meandered down there and got back pretty quickly. It was just a really nice experience.
Yeah. What's the infrastructure like underneath the train line?
Oh, it's not like...
They've got a bit of... It's not like,
you know, Coburg and what have you. I haven't got the playgrounds and stuff. But Carrum has parking underneath, which I actually don't mind if you then take the parking away from in front of the shops and put some parklets and things like that in. But they haven't done that.
Yeah.
So they've just added more parking. But a little bit further down the track there, they've got a basketball hoop, which is good. Good use of space.
Yeah.
But the main thing is, and what they didn't do in Chelsea, and I'm not going to get into what should be there, is they've got permeability, you know, through to the beach. Because most people live not on the beach side. So the main highway, then there's like a block or two.
Yeah.
So at Chelsea, where I am, there's no permeability. You have to walk around to get to these crossings and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's a missed opportunity, a massive missed opportunity for our one. But Carrum's got it quite good. And then Bond Beach as well, you know, they've got the permeability as well.
Yeah. They do get there, yeah.
And that Seaford ride with the wetlands is a favourite with the... We have a long-running Wednesday ride at Merribeck Bug that's been going for 10 years, and that's one of their favourites.
Yeah.
Depending on the wind, we either ride down and get the train back or get the train down and ride back.
Yeah, that's lovely.
There are a couple of those lovely rides, train and then ride back, Altona and the wetlands down through Cheatham, and those places are wonderful as well. Hey, listen, a little bit sad. When the Critical Mass the other week was very good, very well attended. I'll take a couple of notes. There's a couple of great speeches from the parents of
Will and Pierre.
Yeah.
The speech from Bike West was also...
Speech. And, look, just a couple of things. I would have said, you know, over 200, or I think. I'm not too sure. I'm not very good with numbers. But the whole ride, perfectly corked. No policemen on bikes. It was really quite wonderful to see a... They've got their act together a little bit, Critical Mass, but very good at it and very good at doing it themselves, which is good. Hey, listen, the other one, which I had experienced a couple of weeks ago, which I think we all experience every now and then. I live in Yarra, and sometimes I've got to go across to Stoneham. And, look, I understand, you know, Stoneham doesn't spend as much. Oh, they probably spend just as much, well, they probably don't, on bicycle infrastructure, but it's in different places. So you can run into, and that's the same across all councils. And I'm very used to actually crossing that bridge, and actually the whole world changes. Cars are bigger, they drive closer to you, they're a bit faster. But what struck me the last time, and I'm probably becoming a little bit more sensitive than this, is the way that infrastructure then changed the way I approached it. I could feel myself getting a bit tense inside. You become a little bit more defensive. I think you become a little bit too hyper-aware that it actually affects what's going on. So it was really, I mean, I've obviously done this thousands and thousands of times, but to actually know, James, you were coming on, and this is one of our topics for 18 years we've been talking about that. But it's just interesting how it affects yourself physically, how you become defensive, how you become that hypervillain and hyperreactive in some ways if you're not careful. So, happy and sad. There we go. Look, we've got no news, but so we're going to be back and talking about creating accessible and inclusive neighbourhoods when we come back just after this message, if I can find it. I'm sorry, we'll have to keep going. I can't.
We have to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show. Our guest today is James Lang, an active transport specialist working with Stantec here in Australia and with 20 years' experience in the United Kingdom. And we've got James on the show today to talk about something you hear more and more mentioned in Melbourne and Australia, and certainly it's found its way, I know, into the Marybeck Transport Strategy, but that is the Healthy Streets Framework. Maybe you could start, James, by telling us what is the Healthy Streets Framework. And
happy to. So I'm just for a bit of context. I used to work at Transport for London, and Transport for London is where Healthy Streets first came in around 2014. And it was devised by Lucy Saunders, who's a public health specialist. And she basically came up with Healthy Streets as this framework to make sure that in all decisions that we make in transport, that they're fair, they're equitable, and they're actually considerate of people who might not want to drive a car. They might want to walk. They might want to cycle. They might want to just spend time on a street as well. It's just trying to make places better and to make them safer and just ultimately to make sure that people choose to walk or cycle. So she came up with this, and then it actually became part of not just the mayor's transport strategy in London, but of all the strategies, the housing strategy, the policing strategy. Healthy Streets can be found throughout all this. Now, I remember when it first came to TfL, and we're used to these things in kind of state government, government organisations where someone says, oh, we've got this new initiative, and you go, here we go again, a new branding exercise. Yeah. So I thought, here we go, a new branding exercise. And back in the day, back then, I'd be designing a project. I used to lead a design team there. And then, obviously, then we would do some modelling to see what the impact would be like on traffic. If that impact was negative, that got shut down pretty much there, and then the project didn't go any further. But then when Healthy Streets came in, obviously it helped that we had Boris Johnson around, who'd already set the scene for cycling and stuff, and then Sadiq took that on. People started looking at things and going, okay, so the modelling doesn't work, but what else can we get out of this project? And because we were applying Healthy Streets, it was very easy for us to communicate that, because now we weren't doing a bike project and talking about just cycling. We were talking about what's the surrounding land use? Is it easy for people to cross the road to that land use? What's the noise pollution like? What's the air quality like? If somebody wants to go for a walk on this bike route, you know, someone who isn't particularly mobile, or they're elderly, or they've got kids or whatever, can they ever sit down and have a rest whenever they want to? You know, because if they don't, they're not going to choose to walk. Is there enough shade? You know, if it starts raining, or if it's in Australia, even more important, in the sun, is there enough shade there? So we had all these other things that you're kind of bolting on. And you're doing it through this Healthy Street lens, because there's these 10 indicators, and you should go to the website and have a look what they all are. But it just makes everything bigger than what the project is. You're no longer talking about a cycling project. You're no longer talking about a road upgrade, a streetscape upgrade. You're talking about outcomes, and you're talking about how people feel. So Healthy Streets went after that, and it was very, very successful. And I've been promoting it and talking about it, you know, since I left London and since I came to Australia. And now we're starting to get some traction on that. It's also a great framework for communicating to councillors and to decision makers, because one thing, and as someone who's in the industry, you kind of sometimes forget people aren't technical. You know, yeah. I can look at a 2D plan of a drawing and think, oh, yeah, everyone's going to understand that. But you try and go and take that to a counsellor who's got a completely different background, you know, to that. And you're trying to talk to them and you're trying to sell benefits to them. But if you just go and show, bike lane, then they know that they're going to be defensive because they're not daft. They know that there's a social license to do cycling, but they know there isn't a social license to remove parking, for example. So that's all they're focusing on. But if you go to them and say, hey, we can make it easier for people to get to the shops, to the local schools, we can improve safety for people walking around, we can, you know, there's an elderly care home up there, we can allow it so they can reconnect with their community, go for walks, have rest points, you know, the pocket parks here. You know, you can really start selling and building the narrative. Then it's almost like your cycle lane becomes a byproduct of everything you're trying to do. And if you're a good storyteller, then... You can still get it wrong, but if you're a good storyteller, you've got a lot of stuff there that you can go and knock on someone's door and go, we want to do this for you. So the way it's used to communicate to people is very, very good. It's used very effectively in consultation as well, because it just gets rid of this stupid us versus them, bikes versus cars argument. It's much more about that. It's about allowing people to choose to walk, cycle, drive, do whatever they want to do, but whatever way they choose, they're going to be very comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
And... So it gives you a set of quite measurable things you can talk about. Like you mentioned, with if you do the modelling, that was really extracting one measurement and then basing the whole project around that.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, you can literally talk about, you know, the number of trees or the number of benches or the metres for a person to walk, and these are all things people can really start to put together to build that picture you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's quite a few tools in there, and the tool I've been most involved with is the design check tool. I'm a designer, and I actually helped develop that. I helped Lucy develop that for Australia. So she did the one in the UK, and then she came over to a few of us in Australia and said, oh, what are we missing here? And obviously shade became very, very important, maybe not so much in the UK. And it is most of these things that you've seen before, and you can see them at various other organisations and advocacy groups around the country, are very kind of qualitative. There's a lot of, you know, 10 people can get in, it's very subjective. Healthy streets is the closest you'll get to being a lot more data-led. Like it literally will say, is there a seat every 50 metres, 75 metres, 100 metres?
Yeah.
Is there 50% shade coverage on this section of street? Is there 75% tree canopy coverage? Is there 100%? Tree canopy coverage, and how long are you waiting at an intersection? You push that button, do you wait 45 seconds, do you wait 60 to 120, do you wait more than 120, that kind of thing. So it really gets down to it, and you get like a score in a 1, 2, or a 3. So a lot of work has gone into this, but it means you're going out and you can measure this stuff on street. And there's other tools that are more about the feelings, and you can take people out on the street, and we've done that as well. We've used this feeling survey where we used it at one of the councils, I think it was Maroondah, and we got a bunch of people in a room and gave them a healthy streets kind of pitch. And we said, right, you guys go out, score your own streets, tell us what you think. You come back, because people are probably sick of consultants and engineers telling them what they need on their street. So they went out, we didn't even look at the streets, and they came back and they fed back to us what they saw the issues were. And all of a sudden they're looking through the lens of someone who may have a disability or someone who might be pushing a pram. You know, all different. And we say, take your grandkids out, take your grandparents out, you know, get everybody out there to do these surveys. And so there's that. But then there's this technical thing, which I work with a lot, which really measures. So I can go with confidence to a council and say, okay, this is what you've got now. If you do this, this is how it will improve. And this is what it'll mean for the people in the area.
Yeah.
And that's very valuable.
I think that measuring aspect of it was what we had a consultation in Marybeck where there was, this is what you've got now, and here is how it scores within the Healthy Streets framework. And then there were two proposals that they wanted people to give feedback on, and each of those had then also been scored and measured. And so you could see all those little choices that sometimes, especially councillors, are tempted to make in the chamber. Let's just narrow things by 20 centimetres, then what difference will that make? Or let's just remove a couple of trees, but suddenly you can actually measure that actually reduces canopy by this percentage, or that makes this difference. It's really useful being able to measure not just the existing conditions, but all the proposals.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Present them to people.
And it doesn't even have to be a project. Like when I was at TFL, I used to run, they called it the Capital Renewals Programme. So what was that was every time a road got resurfaced or a footpath got resurfaced, I kind of just led the charge and whatever that was. So by using healthy streets, I would force people to say, okay, well, let's do an assessment. What can we make better? We're going out there anyway. We're digging up the road. What can we make better? And a lot of people think healthy streets might be big placemaking projects, and it's not. It might be, well, there's a painted bike lane there. Well, we know painted bike lanes are rubbish, but at least when we put it back, we can widen it by another 300 or 400 millimetres, or we can put a little bit of a painted buffer in, if nothing else, if we haven't got the support for protection. Or if there's a couple of lampposts or signposts in the way that means two people can't walk side in side holding hands with their children, let's just move that lamppost by an extra 300 or 400 mil when we put it back, because we're digging up the footpath anyway. So there's loads of little wins, even extending the length of a bus lane, you know, just to kind of just improve bus journey times, which is a huge thing in London. Not so much here, but a huge thing in London. A few seconds is very valuable to the bus drivers. So you just put things back differently. And a lot of time here, people just go and resurface and they just go like for like. But just looking at this tool and applying this tool, you can like, oh, we haven't got the money to do any big, or we haven't got the political will to do any big kind of projects, but we can make things a little more comfortable for people and just give them the basic minimums that they need, you know, basic footpath widths, you know, better kind of lower level of stress for cycling, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's just a few extra seats. I've planted a couple more trees, all that kind of thing.
It's interesting. We've got a couple of new things in Yarra which have had a separated left turn, a separated bike lane on the inside of the left turning lane. So in Lennox, the end of Lennox Street and Cobbin Street.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. These are just small pieces of road furniture. It is remarkable how much that's changed those two intersections I ride through it, and not just for cyclists. It's interesting how that it actually helps pedestrians as well, because they've got an extra bit of room where they're not going to get hit by a car. Mm. So even those small things, and it's a tiny piece of infrastructure built for cyclists, but the artifact of it is it makes it healthier for other people as well.
Oh, definitely. How many times do you see a waste truck or even something not that big turn left and almost just clip the corner of the curb where people are standing waiting to cross? You just get that separate, you force that turn a little bit wider, everybody's that little bit safer.
And you mentioned developing healthy streets for Australia, so who in Australia is using it? Who do you see using it well?
I think WA use it more than we do. There are a couple of councils. You mentioned Merribeck, and I know Stonington, you know, they're pretty passionate about it. I know you mentioned Stonington, maybe the lack of infrastructure there. I can tell you their officers are trying really hard and they're really good people.
I did make a point of saying I can find some pretty bad infrastructure in Yarra.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the crossing points that I'm thinking of, Chapel Street and McRobinson's Bridge. It's actually those two crossings, you're into the really heart of Stonington. There's high speed, no bike lanes at all. You go 400 metres, things change, obviously.
Yeah.
But the actual intersection between the two of them is pretty quick and pretty.
Yeah.
And there's a roundabout of death on one of them. And the other one, still got trams on Church Street, you still got trams on Chapel Street, but it's a completely different vibe.
Yeah,
you know?
100%.
So, and Stonington are spending money, and they realise they've got a young population, they've got a highly mobile population, they haven't got a population that used to vote the way they used to vote. It's a different place now, and they can't get away with not spending money.
Yeah, and also a lot of their narrow streets and stuff, and they have when you get into the area.
Mm.
Like, you know, they always want to try and apply healthy streets, and they'd love to do things like more modal filters and things like that, because they don't have width to put bike lanes and things like that in. But then there's just this, it's hard to do that. It's hard to close a road. There's a big process you have to go through. And hopefully that's going to be made easier, because that generally lands with state government. And state government, there's some really passionate people who are advocating for healthy streets within state government. And they're trying to integrate it with like the movement and place framework, for example. So people are trying to get that going.
Yeah.
And it just needs, you know, just get more traction. But WA, there's more people, I think, looking at it.
In WA, is it already integrated at the state government level, or is it still councils?
It's still pockets. I mean, it's hard, because when people talk about it to what they actually do on the ground, healthy streets is in the Transport for New South Wales movement and place framework.
Yep.
But I can speak to plenty of people in New South Wales and they'll just laugh when I say that, because it's like the whole vision and validate conversations. The vision and validate is, instead of doing this predict and provide, which is basically modelling,
yep,
do modelling, find out what we need to do for traffic, and then go and either build it or don't build it, where the vision is, no, don't do that. Let's set the vision. What do we want the outcome to be? What do we want this street to feel like to, you know, to walk down, cycle down? Yeah. What do we want it to be in an ideal, perfect world in 20 years? And that's what we go. And then so you do that. And this is all across policies. This vision and validate. Everyone wants to do it. But then you, a lot of the time you get towards the end of your process and then someone's like, should we just do a bit of modelling just to see what the impact's right? And then the whole thing starts falling down. So, yeah, be careful to say it's embedded in any state government because... Yeah.
Victoria has a cycling strategy.
Yeah, there's passionate people in all these organisations, but then they're not the ones that are necessarily... They're never the decision maker. You still need the will. You still need the backing behind you.
Yeah.
And people are still a little bit reserved and a little bit scared to go, you know, full on assault on this kind of thing, which is why it's great that some of the councils are doing it. And because one thing I learned since I've moved here is it doesn't really matter if I'm talking about what's happened in the Netherlands, what's happened in the UK. People in Australia are very much about local precedents and even on a state level.
Yeah.
Just last week, someone said, where have you done this somewhere else?
Yeah.
And they want to see it local.
Yeah.
Because even if it's a great infrastructure, they're scared because it's not normal.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be the ones who, you know, get blamed if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
So it's tricky.
And we can be inherently sceptical of ideas from overseas.
Oh, yeah. We're not London, are we?
That's what I mean. It's interesting. That's part of Donald Horton's quote about, you know, lucky Australia is we are sceptical of other people's very good ideas.
Yeah. All I can say to that, in London we used to say, we're not Amsterdam, you know, we're not Denmark.
Yeah.
And now people are saying, we're not London. And people are saying, we're not Paris. They weren't saying that 15 years ago.
Or even five.
Yeah, exactly. So.
You don't have to go back 15.
It's interesting, that quote at the top of the show, Jane Jacobs, who's obviously a hero for everybody involved in city management. One of her great measurement things, and actually measuring it, was how many people cross that road to get to the other side. And if you want to destroy and atomise a neighbourhood, you make that street a barrier and people stop crossing it.
Yeah, I think, and I talk about this quite a lot at conferences, that one of the big easiest things we can do is not worry about big corridors and routes, just kind of break down severance points based on land use. Where do people want to go to? Just break down the severance. And it might be, I did a job at something on Lygon Street years ago, and I was like, I'm not going to be able to do anything here. So I was like, well, let's just allow people to get in from the sides. Let's put loads of bike parks on the corners where there's... Let people to get there, then get off the bike and walk to the shops or whatever. Because if you're not going to do it, at least facilitate. You know, just do that. Just break down some severance by giving them somewhere to park the bike when they get there. And just a couple of modal fielders on some side streets or something and just allow people in. And sometimes it's just one crossing on a main road. That's all you need. And it unlocks this area to this area. And away you go. And you build on the rest in the future. But just break down the severance first.
Yeah.
So again, healthy streets really helps to identify that.
We need more of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, and if people want to find out more about the Healthy Streets Framework, they can do that at... There's a website.
There is, Healthy Streets. It'll be a .org or .co.uk. It's .com. It's healthystreets.com.
We'll put a link up to that, but if you're in a hurry, you can Google that now.
Yeah, I'll just call me. Take me out for coffee. I'll chew your ear off for as long as you want.
Well, I've had 25 minutes and you obviously can just warm me up.
I'm just warming up. I'm looking at that clock. I'm a bit gutted. But,
we should have done that one-hour program, Val.
I think that's all we have time for, Fat.
It is. Coming up next is...
I think it's Behind the Ballot. So I'm not too sure what it is. So
it's a changeable feast at the moment.
Take care, safe ride. Thank you very much, James, for coming in.
Thank you. Wonderful
to hear that input. We look forward to safer and better cities.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.